The following program is brought to you by Total Theater Online. The views expressed do not necessarily represent those of the staff or management of WGBB. You're listening to the station that serves your community, 1240 WGBB. And now it's time for Dave's Gone By with David Lefkowitz.
There goes the neighborhood. Welcome, everybody, to another edition of Dave's Gone By, brought to you by Total Theater, the Tondra Grill, Hewlett Minuteman Press, and Quiznos of Hewlett on this Thursday, August 19th, 2004. We have so much to do tonight, I've got to keep my introduction pretty short. But I do have to mention, I saw a few days ago the single greatest bit of counter-programming in the history of television broadcasting. As I'm sure you're all aware, the Olympics has been on all week, most of it in glorious tape delay, but still lots of coverage, endless amounts of swimming, vaguely interesting, but not my thing. So other channels are basically resigned to losing the Nielsens on those nights. They figure NBC paid through the tuchus for the rights to air the Olympics, they'll win the time slot, but let's still do our best with what we've got, and we'll hope their ratings are disappointing in relation to what they shelled out and what their advertisers expect. So, there's a lot of reruns on regular series, reality shows, makeover shows, the usual crap, because there's no point in sending up semi-special crap to be shot down by really special crap. Anyway, that's fine and dandy, and you figure that the ideal counter-program to the Olympics would be something non-sports oriented, something so far from weightlifting and shot put and long jump, because anybody who digs sports would probably be watching the Olympics. To counter that, one imagines soap operas, maybe concerts, old movies. These would be the logical programs other networks would send up against the Greek Games. But not Fox, at least not on the night I was watching. Not only did they go with sports, they went with sports that so blew away any of the hoity-toity coverage NBC gave the Olympiad. Opposite the single most universal and recognized international sports competition in world history, on the night I was watching, Fox aired Man vs. Beast 2. I was working at the computer, my wife calls me in, because I am missing, on the TV, on this program, a thrilling contest, a relay race, featuring four midgets. Not to be confused with the Great Race, which has a mere one midget. No, this was four little people in a relay race, but not two against four, or two, or a team of four against a team of, say, four dwarves, or one-legged tall people. No. The midgets were on a track, racing against a camel. They're running around this track, handing off a baton, trying to beat a dromedary galumphing down the same track, the winner being whose ever chest crossed the finish line fastest. Now, they couldn't do it head first because obviously the camel would have an unfair advantage, its neck being longer than its entire competition. And the camel did win. There was a bad handoff between the third and fourth midget. But if you think that was it for Man vs. Beast 2, oh no. The same episode also featured Labrador retrievers jumping into a swimming pool while catching a frisbee, a rather fun and graceful thing to see until you watch humans trying to do the same thing, especially when they're trying to do it faster. And then, in the most magnificent event of all, Samoans in grass skirts climbing up trees, racing against monkeys doing it at the same time. I swear to God, I was sure the next event would be how many bones can Zulus jam through their noses while running from a charging rhinoceros. Now, I looked up on the internet, and apparently in Man vs. Beast 1, a grizzly bear beat the Coney Island hot dog guy by eating 50 wieners in 2 minutes. 80 midgets, 80, competed against an elephant in pulling an airplane, and a sumo wrestler got into the ring with an orangutan. I'm sorry, MASH, Roots, Upstairs, Downstairs, this is the greatest television that there ever was or could be. I don't know if this is the greatest radio show there ever could be, but I'm doing my best. And who am I? I'm Dave. Dave Lefkowitz, radio personality, theater critic, journalist, humorist, and host of Dave's Gone By, a mix of smart talk, silly talk, special talk, and music. Tonight, a very theatrical and homosexual episode. No, not me, but it just kind of worked out that certain themes in the show connect that way. For example, tonight's Dave Goes Off segment has to do with Jim McGreevy and my thoughts on the whole New Jersey blackmail mess. Inside Broadway, our weekly look at New York theater, talks about gay icon Paul Jabara, as well as another queer-themed show. And we'll stay on the theater track for our very special guest, Andy Probst. He's a critic and writer for Backstage and the Broadway Channel on XM Radio, as well as his own website, AmericanTheaterWeb.com. Andy and I are going to chat about and review some new shows, including the Roundabout's revival of After the Fall, the Arthur Miller play inspired by his marriage to Marilyn Monroe, Lincoln Center's revival of Stephen Sondheim's The Frogs with Nathan Lane, and Let's Put on a Show, an autobiographical review on the life and career of the legend Mickey Rooney. All that in the next 57 minutes on our 90th show, which, like the other 89, is rated DGV 13 for content. If you can take it, so can we. And we'll be taking it to you with Inside Broadway, just two short commercials from now. Ooh, it's getting toasty in here. Toasty in a tasty way, because Quiznos subs transcend the ordinary. They're made to order with quality ingredients like freshly sliced premium meats, crisp vegetables, and rich melted cheeses, all piled high on artisan bread. I don't know what that is, but it's delicious and oven-toasted to bring out the flavor. They've also got low-carb toasty flatbread, fresh, crisp salads, hearty old-fashioned soups, and specialty desserts. Have you been to the new Quiznos in Hewlett? 1320 Broadway, same block as Lohman's. Stop in and tell owner Ken, or anybody else working there, that you heard about Quiznos on Dave's Gone By, and you'll get 10% off your meal. In fact, stop into any Quiznos and mention this program. Nothing will happen, but, you know, it's good publicity for me. Anyway, discover the extraordinary taste of Quiznos subs, 1320 Broadway in Hewlett. Mmm, toasty!
Oh, my God, the wedding is next month. We need flyers, invitations, booklets. Irving, we are screwed.
No, we're not, Pearl. We'll just go to Hewlett Minuteman Press.
Hewlett Minuteman? What can they do?
Printing, engraving.
Really?
Letterhead, souvenirs.
Wonderful. Are they still at 1315 Broadway in Hewlett?
Yep. 516-569-5577.
Well, stop dawdling. Let's go.
Yes, dear. Day after the wedding, I kill her.
Inside Broadway, brought to you by Total Theater's Performing Arts Insider, your everything theater guide. Most of the time on Inside Broadway, the segment is geared towards shows that open on or around the time this is on the air. For example, a couple of weeks ago, I talked about the new Frank Wildhorn musical, Dracula, when it began previews. Well, here's a reminder that it opens tonight at the Belasco Theater with Tom Hewitt and Melissa Errico in starring roles. But since I already covered that Transylvanian tuner, I thought tonight we'd talk about shows not opening this week or next, or even this year or possibly next. Broadway plays and musicals in the pipeline that may or may not make it to a theater near you. For example, syndicated columnist Liz Smith wrote last week that because The Boy from Oz became such a smash, producers want to come up with another show like it. After all, The Boy from Oz, which closes in mid-September, has been a moneymaker and a star vehicle for the Tony-winning Hugh Jackman. The show follows the short but colorful life of entertainer Peter Allen and features a liberal dose of his music. Well, in Last Dance, writer-producer Robert Wax intends to do the same for songwriter Paul Jabara. He's even less of a household name than Peter Allen, but you've probably heard his biggest hits, Enough is Enough, It's Raining Men, and the disco staple, Last Dance. Jabara was a Brooklyn boy who was in the original Broadway cast of Hair. He later worked closely with Donna Summer and he wrote songs for such films as The Lords of Flatbush and the Barbra Streisand vehicle, The Main Event. In fact, it was Jabara who introduced Streisand to the disco dance music scene, for which he will never be forgiven. Still, he has a following, and like Peter Allen, he's something of a gay icon. He died of AIDS in 1992, a year after conceptualizing and distributing the very first Red Ribbon in the fight against that disease. So, look for Last Dance, maybe, in the next 2 to 3 seasons. The same goes for a very different kind of musical, a stage version of Pink Floyd's The Wall, one of the most popular albums of all time, made by Alan Parker into an influential rock movie in 1982. Word now has it that Roger Waters is working with Miramax and Tommy Mottola to bring the band's anti-authoritarian, semi-classic rock opera to Broadway. And, judging by the success of everything from Tommy to Mamma Mia, if they can pull it off and pitch it to the right audience, the bricks in that wall might as well come from Fort Knox. And one more musical that may come to Broadway quicker than the others is The Opposite of Sex. I'm not sure what The Opposite of Sex is, but I do know that it was a movie about 5 years ago that has now been adapted into into a musical by Douglas J. Cohen and Robert Jess Roth. It's about a girl who sets about seducing the boyfriend of her gay half-brother. Christina Ricci played the lead in the movie, and when the show premieres in San Francisco this fall, Carrie Butler will star. She's the little cutie from Little Shop of Horrors and Hairspray, and she'll be playing opposite Jeff McCarthy, last seen as the policeman in Urinetown, and Karen Ziemba, who was in everything from Steel Pier to last season's Never Gonna Dance. If The Opposite of Sex does well on the West Coast, look for it to come to Broadway by spring. Which theater? Too early to tell. But the best way to keep track is by subscribing to Performing Arts Insider magazine. A bible of the industry for 60 years, Performing Arts Insider gives you all the information about what shows are on Broadway, what shows are coming to Broadway, and what shows shouldn't be anywhere near Broadway. Plus, the magazine has comprehensive listings for off and off-off Broadway, as well as up-to-date calendars for cabaret, opera, and dance. All that, plus reviews, rumors, and special features, pick up the September issue at the Drama Bookshop in Manhattan for the fall season preview. Can't get there? Total Theater will send you one for just $10, nearly a third off the cover price. Just call 516-295-1511 or visit TotalTheater.com for the address and the details. That's also the place to go for subscription information. Now through August 31st, Performing Arts Insider subscriptions are on sale for 20% off. Again, call 516-295-1511 or go to TotalTheater.com and get yourself a copy or a year's worth of copies of Performing Arts Insider. And speaking of things that run a full year, happy first anniversary to Todd Robbins and his downtown show, Carnival Knowledge, which opened at the Soho Playhouse on Van Damme Street, August 17, 2003. Carnival Knowledge salutes the old carny sideshows and freak shows in a very breezy and family-friendly way. Todd was a guest on Dage Gone By last year, and he explained some of the intricacies of what he does, including hammering nails into his nostrils, eating light bulbs, and swallowing fire, all of which he does on his own and has been training himself to do since he saw his first sideshow when he was 12. So I asked Todd Robbins why he performs so many of these weird and dangerous acts by himself.
I loved it all. I not only loved all the skills and things, but also just loved the whole culture, because it is the original counterculture. It is a nomadic life that these people have been traveling around, and that's really what we put on the stage there. And I didn't really want to specialize. I wanted to learn it all. And as it worked out, I worked up about an hour, over an hour of solo material that I've done in colleges and universities all over the place. and took that around. And from that, I started adding in the stories and some of the larger things and adding a few more people to the show. And little by little, it evolved into the show that is Carnival Knowledge. The funny thing about it is, I just wanted to be as good as I possibly could at these things and studied with a number of old guys that taught me the various skills and really worked very hard at all this. And one of the old showmen, who's a little bit of a shady character, they have him in show business, really. Yeah. Said to me, kid, you're doing it right. You're doing it right. And I go, what do you mean? So you learned all the skills. I said, well, yeah, I think it's important. He said, oh, it is important. So that when you have your own show and you're running and the sword swallower comes to you and wants more money, you say, what, for this? And you swallow the sword and think, anyone can do that. Well, I'm paying you too much, kid. You see, that's what you got to do. I'm like, okay, thank you, Bobby. I appreciate the... So that's what he thought I was doing it for, but it was just... I just wanted to be sort of a one-man sideshow.
Todd Robbins, the one-man sideshow. Actually, he does have guest performers, including Little Jimmy, a salsa dancing dwarf, and Twistina, the contorting, cavorting girl. So again, happy first birthday, Carnival Knowledge, and many more. And we'll have many more theater stories for you in the weeks to come in this totally theatrical, total theater segment, Inside Broadway.
We've just been Inside Broadway from Performing Arts Insider and TotalTheater.com. Dave's Gone By listeners know I love a good play on words, but let me say a good word on plays, my plays, collected in a lovely book called Marriage, Babies, and the End of the World. Comedies that range from strange to deranged, from sad to satirical, fun to read, and unmistakably Dave. Just $20 hardcover, $12 soft, put down that crappy bestseller and pick up some laughs. 516-295-1511 or davesgoneby.com. You know who's never eaten at the Tandoor Grill? Osama bin Laden. And you want to know why? Two reasons. One, he's an idiot. He doesn't realize how tasty their appetizers, main courses, and Indian breads can be. Two, he must be living in a cave, because for months I've been telling people 222 Sunrise Highway in Rockville Center with a menu at TandoorGrill.com. Osama doesn't even know you can get 10% off by mentioning Dave's Gone By. And you know what? Don't even tell him about the Tandoor Grill. He'll never know it's India-licious. Dave's Gone Cultural, Dave's Gone Cultural, Dave's Gone Cultural, ooh. Dave's Gone Cultural, Dave's Gone Cultural, Dave's Gone Cultural, ooh. Welcome back to Dave's Gone By on AM 1240 WGBB Freeport and live streaming on the web at am1240wgbb.com. Time for a segment called Dave's Gone Cultural, where we look at the arts, and usually it's about theater. Sometimes we do music and movies and books, but generally I return to my love, which is the theater, and I've got someone talking to me today, a very well-respected and very, very busy theater critic and writer. His name is Andy Probst, and you can find his work on his own website, americantheaterweb.com, as well as Backstage. He writes for them, and you're going to be hearing him even more than he is now on satellite radio, and we'll hear a lot about that from him. So please welcome to Dave's Gone Cultural, Andy Probst. Hey, Andy.
Hey, Dave.
How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
No, wait a minute. No, you are not good. Tell everybody what's going on with you.
Well, we're in the middle of Fringe. I'm reviewing 50 of the Fringe shows right now.
Oh, actually, I meant your apartment. But
oh, the apartment. Electrical fire in the apartment above mine, and we're like working through with Con Edison the whole nine yards. We've got a wire that needs to be run from my place down to the basement. It's a joy to not have electricity in the middle of August.
For days. It's going to be like for 4 or 5 days you're not going to have electricity.
Right.
Fun. But you're not even going to be home that much because you're going to be, as you said,
at the Fringe.
The Fringe Fest. Now, how many shows are you going to see?
I'm going to see about 50 of them. 200.
Oh. Is that what you did last year or the year before, or is this your...
That has been my average for, I guess, about 2-3 years now.
Well, going by the last couple of years, then, what's the percentage, would you say, of shows that were really worth seeing, some that were just passable, and some were like, why did I even bother to go?
I think that from where I stand, there are only about 10 to 15% of what I see, why did I bother to go? I'd have to say that the vast majority are passable, where there are glimmers here and there that there's some talent, either the writing or a performer that I've never gotten to see, that I just go, wow, I'm really glad I was here. And then 10% are just like, wow, this is what it's all about. This is why I go to the theater.
Which were the 10% of those last year? Do you remember some titles?
I quite liked a show coming out of Chicago called Pinafore. It was an updating using the Gilbert and Sullivan music and a good deal of their lyrics.
Cool.
But it looked at the Navy's don't ask, don't tell policy toward gays, and it was very, very funny. I also quite liked a little musical that was produced by The Inverse, and it was a little fairy tale thing, and the name a year later is escaping me.
And which ones are you looking for most this time?
This time around, I have to say that I'm looking forward toward a couple of the shows that are more highly political. There's one called The Passion of George W., which is a musical, and some of the materials are saying that it's kind of what a musical might be about the country in which we live if Michael Moore to have written it.
Okay.
There's a musical that in Britain they're saying it has been banned because the folk there consider it seditious. It's called Diana.
And I mean, it's about Lady Di. And
about Lady Di.
Her being dead. Lady Dead, yeah.
And one last musical. There are obviously a lot of plays in here, too, but this year I'm leaning towards some of the musicals. There's something called All Good Things, which is about a 60s rock group called The Remains. And they actually fronted for the Beatles.
Wow.
And rumor has it that at a couple of the performances, some of those band members are actually going to be performing with the cast. And so if for nothing else, in terms of seeing some folk on stage that I might not otherwise, that I'm quite much looking forward to.
You'll be seeing All That Remains.
All That Remains.
Yes, all that. Sorry about that. Okay, let's talk Broadway. So since we did our off-Broadway thing, which you haven't even seen yet, there's a few Broadway things that you have checked up on, including the revival of Arthur Miller's After the Fall, being done at the Roundabout with Peter Krause, Carla Gugino. She's playing the sort of Marilyn Monroe-ish character, Vivian Benesch, Jessica Hecht. What did you think?
It's a very, very problematic production of it. As you said, the Carla Gugino character is based on one of Arthur Miller's wives, Marilyn Monroe. And when the play opened in the early 60s, everyone focused on how autobiographical this piece is. And in his stage directions, he's quite specific that the landscape of the set is supposed to be abstracted and that it is taking place inside the character who stands in for Miller, Quentin, whom Peter Krause is playing. And Michael Mayer, the director, has staged this on a very, very realistic recreation of the TWA terminal out at Kennedy. And as such, it grounds Krause's performance so that as these characters ebb and flow and the character worries about how he treated his first wife, who's played by Jessica Hecht, as he thinks about his marriage to this self-destructive, alcoholic, pill-popping, singer-turned-actress.
Courtney Love. Oh, no, sorry.
And contemplates a third, and then also worries about how he handled himself in front of the House Un-American Committee. All of these events, we move back and forth in time. Certain scenes overlap one another, and to have this in this very realistic environment is quite distracting, and I think it grounded Krause's performance to the point that it's just, it's blandness.
Yeah, I think a lot of the critics really agree, and I too. I think he's obviously a good actor, but something isn't quite clicking with him in this role. He just sort of seems to go through it semi-believably, but not intensely.
It's not an intense experience at all. unfortunate to say that the play does heat up when Gugino comes in, and we watch, the audience watches her as she, you know, drinks and becomes more famous, and drinks because she's famous, and tries to have him hold her in control. It's very painful to watch. But there are fireworks on the stage because of this woman who is making quite the Broadway debut, I think.
Well, have you ever seen another production of After the Fall that was more spatially diffuse than being set clunk in an airport?
I have seen it in a more abstracted environment. It was a college production, so it's comparing apples and oranges. It was easier, I thought, for the audience and for the actor playing Quentin to not be distracted by why are these people all here.
But I do assume that once that character, Maggie, comes on, even in a different production, the whole thing's going to just boost to another level because of the character.
It did boost to another level, but before that, as you watch Quentin wrestle with his first wife, who accuses him of not being there, not being available emotionally, those scenes crackled. And here I could feel half of the scene crackling because of Heck's haunting performance.
Right. And yeah, I think in that case you're also right about the locale. It feels very sort of antiseptic and open, and not intimate in any way. Let's move on to another show that opened recently. A musical, an old musical also, from 1974, Stephen Sondheim and Bert Shevelov, by way of Nathan Lane recently, The Frogs at Lincoln Center. Your thoughts?
I had a lot more fun than I expected to.
Now, let's qualify that as far as a critic going in with expectations. Why did you have expectations and what were they?
As a critic, I'd gone in as second night press. And as such, much like a juror walking into a trial, I do not read reviews before I go in if I'm going into review, but it's impossible to not have some sense of the buzz within the theater community and within the community of theater critics.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had gleaned that their experiences had not been entirely satisfactory to for them.
Okay.
That being said, I'd not read specifics, so I walked in thinking, okay, let's see what we have, and found myself pleasantly surprised.
All the way through?
For the most part, yes.
I realize that's a loaded question, and we'll get to why, but yeah, I mean, from...
For the most part, I know what you're leading toward. Do you want to do a plot synopsis, or should I for the listeners?
Well, why don't you go for it? You're the guest.
All right. The Frogs is based on a play by Aristophanes, and it was written at a time when Greece was at a war, and had been at war for quite some time, and looks at Dionysus, the god of drama and wine, who's seeing this war, and he's seeing that the world is going nowhere fast, and he decides that the only thing that might save the world is if he brings back a playwright from Hades. Dionysus and his servants begin their descent to Hades. Along the way, they visit his half-brother Heracles. They see Pluto. And in the original, there is a debate between Aeschylus and Euripides. In this new play, there is a debate between Shaw and Shakespeare, and then one of these playwrights returns to Earth in the hopes that he will write plays that will make the audience wake up out of their complacency. Representing the complacency of the audience are this group of frogs who live in the river Styx that he encounters on his way to Hades. And it's that debate which I had heard might sap some of the comic energy that Nathan Lane and his conspirator, Roger Bart, who plays the servant, bring to the table in this new production.
But you found that even through that debate, which I also agree having read the reviews, having heard the buzz about it, that there was a whole half hour of the second act that was something of a downer and brought everything kind of flat and was interesting to a point, but way too long. And then I sat through and I was like, they were doing everything in their power to make the debate quick and, you know, with a few one-liners and interesting, and it moved fairly quickly. Even so, I do have my reservations about the whole sequence, but you were okay with it?
I think that the sequence could be trimmed by 5 minutes. For someone who sees as much as I do, I'm mm-hmm. very aware when I feel that my time is being wasted. I felt that both the character, the actor playing Shakespeare and the actor playing Shaw, whom audiences will know from television,
it's Daniel Davis
from TV's The Nanny, handled the actual quotes that are thrown in there pretty well, and they were very pointed as these two playwrights debate women, or it's not even debate, it's how do they handle these subjects. And anecdotally, my guest that evening was a friend who is much more of a Mets fan than a theater fan.
Uh-huh.
He leaned forward and afterwards looked at me and said, okay, well, I think Shaw won. They made the wrong choice. And I thought the fact that he had been engaged by it and listened to each side of it, a good indication that if you're willing to give yourself over to it,
then you would
not,
go with it, yeah.
It's not a didactic lesson plan. Maybe a little shaving here and there just to bring it all in tune. I have more problems with the overall production than that sequence.
The production meaning?
I think that Susan Stroman, who brought, you know, us the producers, it's not her best work.
Well, I have to agree, you know, especially the end of the first act when the frogs finally come on. The costumes are great, but that production number was, I thought, pretty annoying.
It was pretty annoying. I thought that everything, all of her dances looked generic.
Yeah.
I could see recycled bits from other pieces that she staged. I thought that she got most creative. There were moments in which the dancers' bodies looked as if they were from the sides of Grecian pottery. And that, I thought, was quite beautiful and quite inventive. And I thought that the circus-like atmosphere that pervaded the visuals felt vaguely inappropriate. And one moment in the dance for the frogs in particular, where they have to get Nathan Lane into a bungee suit,
mm-hmm.
I could feel that the dancers were working to mask getting him into this.
And there's also, I think, a scene where he's supposed to be leaping up to the balcony and going towards his late wife, and you know, it seems not to be him. I think they do a switcheroo at that
moment.
They
do a switcheroo.
And it just didn't work for me at all.
It did not.
Yeah. The thing about the show for me, though, is that it has no real forward go. It feels like an ambling, picaresque, slow-moving adventure with, admittedly, lots and lots of laughs. But you can feel it's sort of like that turntable that goes around and around. It's grinding forward without any real urgency, even when they go to find the playwright and there is something of a plot. And for me, that's what really kind of keeps the show in second gear. And also, I don't think much of the Sondheim work was really, really special. It became about his lyrics, which were so relentlessly clever and based on end rhyme that after a while, I even got a little tired of them. I wanted something a little more, you know, I could have dealt with without so many witty rhymes and a little more pleasant music. I don't know if you feel that way.
I have read the reviews now, and I'll borrow from another critic. I believe it was John Simon who said that the tune sounds second drawer. Most composers would kill to have something from Sondheim's second drawer. For me as a listener, I know that a good chunk of it, particularly the new pieces, because there are six from the production, which was mounted in a swimming pool in 74,
mm-hmm.
And six from that had been written especially for this new adaptation by Lane. I thought that, interestingly enough, knowing the original, there is a song for Lane and his slave when they're traveling down to Hades,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
That is integrated with an old bit of music, which is very staccato. And the new bit of music sounds more as if it's a 1930s, 1940s patter song. And the blend of those two, I thought he'd handled very nicely. I also liked the the dual edge that he gave to the song which Pluto sings when the Nathan Lane character Dionysus arrives in Hades, because Pluto is singing about how grand everything is in this afterworld. And there, it's a very Las Vegas-y show number, both in terms of the music, which isn't great.
Right. And I was a little disappointed in Peter Bartlett, in his handling of that song. He was very funny otherwise, but I don't think he was really on top of it, as a showman would be.
I think that the problem is that song has a terribly difficult double edge, because I was listening to the lyrics, one of which is something to the effect of, when you're dead, you no longer fear living.
Right.
And if you think... I haven't gone back and done the research. I don't think that Sondheim has ever written a gay character. And I don't believe that he is unaware of the fact that he will be 75 next year. I wondered how much of that song was about him looking at his own mortality. I found the lyrics very dark, set against the glitz of this Las Vegas show number.
Oh,
and I don't know how much Bartlett could handle that, and how much time they had in rehearsal to delve through the intricacies of what that song might, may or may not be about for both the character and just overall.
Yeah, I don't even see it necessarily needing that darkness. It because it's a very satirical song. I mean, here it is. You can take it at face value. Things are great when you're dead, because you don't have to worry about all those things you did when you were alive. Even on that basic level, if you even kept it there, I thought he was just like sort of a beat behind a lot of the time.
I think he was, but I think that he's a bright enough performer that he knew that there was something else there and not sure what to do with it.
But all in all, I think we both agree that The Frogs is worth seeing and of value more than just as a Sondheim relic, right?
Oh, I think that audiences will go and have a terrific time. We'll both agree, I believe, that Nathan Lane knows how to sell all of the show's humor, which ranges from old dumb vaudeville punchlines to contemporary satiric against George Bush.
Right. I mean, what was your favorite line from that?
They describe one of the frogs as a bush belly whacker, a frog which makes preemptive strikes and then forgets why it did it. And Roger Bart, who was a last-minute replacement, playing Dionysus' slave.
He's terrific.
Really a delight. And some listeners may have seen him. He was one of the replacements for Matthew Broderick in The Producers.
Yeah.
And I think that the chemistry between the two is quite, well, lovely.
Absolutely. I totally agree with you. I mean, for all my quibbles about the show, there are, I think, a lot of laughs. And certainly listening, as you said, to second-level Sondheim, or John Simon said, there are worse things to do than that.
Yes.
Well, speaking of worse things to do than that, let's talk about one other show that is off-Broadway and stars one of the great legends of film, of basically the last century. Mickey Rooney, little diminutive fellow who has had a career that lasted, about 80 years. And he's running that career down, quite literally, unfortunately, in his current show called Let's Put On a Show with his wife, Jan Chamberlain. And, Andy, your thoughts about Let's Put On a Show?
It made me very sad. I have great respect for the body of work that Rooney's created, you know, over the years, from that first film that I think of him ever doing, A Midsummer Night's Dream, through to something like Bill back in the 80s. He's built something that has a half for him that he can do biographical material and some songs that he's written himself. He doesn't have a voice to sing. When he's sitting there and talking about his life, which he doesn't do enough of, I found him absolutely charming. The sadness began the moment he walked out on stage for me, and his tuxedo jacket
was
buttoned.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, all right, fine, his wife's in this. She's going to come out. They'll fix and we'll see how much in love they are, and it will be cute and charming. And what we think about him as needing this stronger woman beside him, a.k.a. someone like Judy Garland from those films, to, like, kind of brush him up, it didn't happen.
Right,
and
he came with that suit, and then in the second act, you had the wardrobe malfunction.
The wardrobe malfunction, there's a microphone in his bow tie, and that started to slip. He began to panic, and my heart broke.
Hmm.
And that just is so unfortunate. And I'm hopeful that when reviews have appeared, that everyone will take into consideration this man's body of work and be kind, and we can all just recommend that perhaps he needs to rethink this or maybe move on to something else.
Well, I'm not going to be so kind because he's 83. He's not 103. I mean, there are a lot of very spry and together 83-year-olds who, you know, okay, he was using a monitor to read basically all his stuff.
Teleprompter.
But even so, he was stiff and slow reading a teleprompter and had no real clue. And granted, the Irish Repertory Theater, where this is taking place, is a very weird place to play because it's got two sides of an audience.
Separated by a pillar.
Yeah, exactly. So you turn to one place, and then you've sort of got to turn to the other, and that's not the easiest thing to navigate, but he did it so stiffly that it didn't seem like they bothered to really rehearse the space or rehearse the show, which, ironically, they've been doing in various forms since 1995. Let me also add that for the show itself, as you say, the charming parts are when he's telling about his life or telling some jokes, which is great, which is fine, and he still has that charisma to capture an audience, even if his voice is gravelly. That's okay. And he can sing a little bit, and I like the way he played the piano on one tune. But there was nothing you learned in the show, not a thing that you did not read in the stage bill going in. His entire life is right there, and
there
he doesn't...
the printed page. I think that the reason for my empathy for the man is not so much about his age as my intuition that he's doing this for the other half of the event, which is his wife. And I had this strong sense that she had strong-armed him into doing this so that she could perform some of her Patsy Cline bits. And so I'm just thinking, all right, fine. He's doing this because it makes sure that everything is copacetic at home, and so I wouldn't recommend it, and I'm hopeful that perhaps he will, like, stop doing nice things for the wife.
Well, I mean, she is not on stage for the whole first act. I mean, it's not as if it's the Chan and Mickey show, so that's what people are getting, a full
they
2 hours of Mickey
almost. A full dose of him, and him not at his best.
So
I got the feeling that he would just as soon not be doing it at all.
Maybe that would not have been also the case 3 years ago. Maybe he has gotten a little older and weaker. So, of the three shows that we've talked about, I guess we both agree that The Frogs is the most, the one you should most likely see. After the Fall, worth a look, do you think, or read the play?
I think read the play. You'd have to, in my opinion, be a very, very serious theater lover to go and enjoy the finer details of the smaller moments. That Peter Krause is on stage for 2 hours and 45 minutes nonstop. It's pretty insurmountable in terms of just an enjoyable evening of theater, I think.
Okay, I sort of disagree. I thought there was enough in there, and especially distancing it from Miller's autobiography, which we can now. And I think there's a lot about relationships and marriage that is on stage and that is entertaining, that maybe, yes, it's a little long and not what the production could be, but I do think it's worth a look. However, the Mickey Rooney, let's put on a show, let's not.
Let's not.
But let us all go to AmericanTheaterWeb.com, and that's theater with an E-R, right?
That's right.
AmericanTheaterWeb.com. Tell people what that is.
American Theater Web. It's entering its sixth year. What you'll find there are links to roughly 6,000 theater websites, theater producing or presenting organizations around the country, their productions. It's a database that's fully searchable so that if you want to find Sondheim in California in June, you can. You'll find my original reviews and features, along with transcripts of the Broadway and Beyond pieces I do every day on XM Satellite Radio.
Please tell us a little more about that.
XM Satellite Radio is one of the two satellite radio channels or services that are available in this country right now.
Mm-hmm.
They have a station that is 24/7 Broadway show tunes. And in addition, there are interviews that are done by the station's program director, John Van Susten, and I have a daily piece called Broadway and Beyond, in which I offer reviews as well as news about theater happening both in the city and across the country.
Great.
And those transcripts appear every day on ATW. We're beginning to talk about some more long-term projects that I can have with the station and the company, and in particular looking at emerging writers and music forces in the music theater. And then on ATW, audiences or viewers can find not only my original, but they will find a digest of news from 55 papers that is clipped daily by hand. So it is probably, I think, the best snapshot of what is happening in theater around the country that one can find online right now.
Well, you heard it from the man who publishes it, Andy Probst, and AmericanTheaterWeb.com, and also listen for his stuff on XM Satellite Radio. And thanks for listening to him today on my show on Dave's Gone By. I want to thank Andy. I hope you get your electricity back.
Well, thank you so much, Dave. I really enjoyed being here.
Thank you, man.
On Friday night, I listen to Bonnie D. Graham. On GBB at 6 o'clock, that's where I am. She gives you lots of tips on romance and amour, like how to pick up guys without being a whore. Then Saturday, it's Mr. Redman's music show. At 7:30, it's where new musicians go. And then at 9, it's time for Zany Comedy, hosted by two young guys named Mikey and Jimmy. GBB is the radio star. 12:40 a.m. is where we are. Dave's Gone By on Thursday night. Music and jokes with satirical bite. Also on Thursdays, if you're looking for some fun, at 6 o'clock, tune in to Larry David's Son. And then on Tuesday, if you're looking for light jazz, at 9 p.m., that's just what Mike Shamari has. And don't forget, on Sunday night, it's Joe Salzone, for right-wing politics is really quite well-known. He's on at 7 with his own take on the news. And just like Dave, he does a bunch of interviews. GDD is the radio star. AM 1240, that's where we are. So many shows, so give them a try. They're almost as good as Dave's Gone By. GBB is the radio star. GBB is the radio star. GBB is the radio star.
Welcome back to Dave's Gone By on AM 1240 WGBB Freeport and live streaming at AM 1240 WGBB. com. I plan to do a Dave Goes Off segment at this point. Dave Goes Off is where I, Dave, go off on a particular topic or discourse or rant. Sometimes it's biting you angry, like last week's on the Long Island Railroad. Other times it's more bemused or confused, as this one would be, since I was going to talk about the resignation of New Jersey Governor Jim McGreevy. That is such a weird and complicated story, curiouser and curiouser every day. And I just wanted to weigh in on how unfortunate it was that the good part of what McGreevy did, coming out as a gay man in high-level politics, shouldn't be, but probably will be, overshadowed by negatives. Brave as it was to hold that coming-out party press conference, the fact that he quit immediately looks damn cowardly. He has the appearance of his turning tail from the conservative backlash, or unwilling to endure what the Republicans did to Clinton when he cheated on his wife. But of course, alas, this being politics, there's also corruption here. And one hopes people understand that McGreevy had to resign because of all those patronage jobs he gave to unqualified and dishonest people. Man is judged by the company he keeps, whether or not he met that company in a leather bar on 10th Avenue. But again, I was going to do this Dave Goes Off segment But much as I go to the theater and have a lot of gay friends and acquaintances, I'm really not part of that culture. So it's a little strange for me to comment on the relationship between McGreevy and his lover, victim, blackmailer, chief security advisor, Golong Sipple. For this, I needed a homosexual, and I needed one quick. Fortunately, I got in touch with a fella who's been on the program before. His last time was over a year ago, when he weighed in on the annual New York Gay Pride Parade. He also congratulated the Supreme Court for finally striking down ancient sodomy laws. I think, as a thank you, he even offered to sodomize all the judges, except Ginsburg and O'Connor. So he is definitely the sodomite of choice for this program. Please welcome back our gay friend, Peter Fitzgerald.
Well, hello. What a big stink they're having in New Jersey. And I don't mean the thousand other stinks you can smell coming off the turnpike. Oh, Jim. Oh, Jim McGreevy. You could have been a beacon, a shining light, a neon penis showing the way to other closeted boys just like yourself. But you're like a little gay groundhog. You came out, looked around, saw your shadow, and ran back in. Were you so in love with that boy chick that you gave him any job just to make him happy? Or were you so scared of him telling on you that you gave him any job just to keep his mouth shut? Well, at least when it wasn't on you. Wiggle, wiggle! Either way, you were very naughty. And now, you won't leave office till November 15th, so the Democrats keep your seat. Of course, if you kept your seat to yourself, you wouldn't be in this mess. Wiggle, wiggle! But seriously, I'm so topsy-turvy over this whole thing. The only way I could respond to it was through art. Through the creation of something perfect and beautiful. Which means, yes, I've written a poem. I hope you like it. It's called McGreevy. Copyright 2004 by Peter Fitzgerald. Ahem. McGreevy. There once was a boy named McGreevy, whose ethics were slimy and skeevy. He gave a big job to some Israeli slob, and now it's all over the TV. It's great that he's out of the closet, 'cause not every gay person does it. But he let his stinger get caught in the ringer. Now that wasn't bright of him, was it? But let's not feel sorry for Sipple, whose salary quickly did triple. He says he was hounded, but to me it sounded much less like a wave than a ripple. I'm sure they began coy and flirty, until it turned greedy and dirty. Why else would the governor appoint his gay lovener the head of New Jersey security? And that's why it's sad, but it's fitting, for Governor M to be quitting. It's not his gay life, or deceiving his wife, or the other small sins he's admitting. But don't take my hard-earned money and give it to your homo honey. It's wrong and corrupt to help boys you've stopped. Just kiss them and say, beat it, sonny. So goodbye, McGreevy. God bless. I hope you get out of this mess. And next fall or next spring, tell all on Larry King and call me. I've picked out your dress.
Sponsor me, Dave's Gone By. Run your ad, folks will buy. If you want to reach the public, sponsor me.
Advertise on this program for incredibly reasonable rates with long-term discounts. See prices at davesgoneby.com or call 516-295-1511.
Sponsor me. If you're wise, on Dave's Gone By, you'll advertise. If you want to be successful, sponsor me.
Welcome back to Dave's Gone By number 90, the Gay 90, as we've titled it. Hope you've had a gay old time listening to it. Gotta give a few straight up thank yous and best wishes to a bunch of people. I want to thank my adorable wife, Joyce, for reminding me every day why I'm not gay. Happy birthday to my little cousin, Alex, my big cousin, Adam, and my good friends, Nihal and Gregoire, listening out in Washington, D.C. I want to thank my good friend Scott for helping me out on the air this past Monday while I was filling in for Engineer Joe Salzone. Hope he feels better soon. Thanks also to Engineer Dennis for his last-minute assistance. Thank you to my special guest, Andy Probst, from AmericanTheaterWeb.com. Very articulate, very well-reasoned, and for something very well-seasoned, visit our sponsor, the Tondra Grill in Rockville Center. Check their menu at TondraGrill.com or make a copy of it at Hewlett Minuteman Press, 1315 Broadway in Hewlett. And then, for a snack, grab a toasty sandwich across the street at Quiznos, Quiznos of Hewlett. And remember that all three of these places, Quiznos, Minuteman, and the Tondra Grill, they all will take 10% off the bill if you mention Dave's Gone By. And I've got to thank the other shows on this station that mention Dave's Gone By, the Instrumental Invasion of Jazz, 9 p.m. Tuesdays, WGBB Tonight with Larry Davidson, Thursdays at 6, Long Island's Dating with Bonnie D. Graham, Fridays at 6, Mr. Redman's Music Show, and the Mikey and Jimmy Show, forming the Saturday Night Rock Block, starting at 7:30, and Sunday night, the aforementioned Joe Salzone with Your World at 7. And, of course, be here at 7 next Thursday, August 26th, for the 91st edition of Dave's Gone By. 100 happens first week in November, by the way. I'll have more to say about that soon. Until then, don't miss your Dave's Gone By. This is Dave Lefkowitz. Good night. I am what I am. Not gay, just am. And gone by.
I am what I am. I am my own special creation. So, come take a look. Give me the hook or the ovation. It's my world that I want to have a little pride in. My world. And it's not a place I have to hide in. Life's not worth a damn till you can say, hey world, I am what I am. I am what I am. I don't want praise. I don't want pity. I bang my own drum. Some think it's noise, I think it's pretty. And so, if I love each feather and each spangle, why not try to see things from a different angle? Your life is a sham, till you can shout out loud, I am what I am. I am what I am, and what I am needs no excuses. I deal my own deck. Sometimes the ace, sometimes the deuces. There's one life and it's no return and no deposit. One life, so it's time to open up your closet. Life's not worth a damn till you can shout out loud, I am what I am. Good night, New York.